This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American Research Professor for the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. And we turn immediately to the trouble in the New World, starting with Havana. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Havana, for decades, is a puzzle for the United States. The embargo, the confrontation, leak, beginning with the Soviet threat in the 1960s and leading now to the mysteries of the protests in the streets, not of Havana only, but outlying cities in Cuba. The explanation is twofold that I hear from Europe especially. This is about the embargo and the Cuban people being despairing of health care services and food and adequate care because of the embargo. That's one explanation. The other is the embargo does not involve food and medicine and never has. Also, Cuba can trade with anybody for products. This is about a lack of hard currency because not only has Russia cut off its subsidies of many decades, but so has Venezuela given the trouble in Caracas. I don't ask you to choose. I ask what to make of these protests that are now suppressed by an organization called the Black Berets. At the same time, there are sanctions being placed on the Cuban police, the Cuban Interior Ministry, who supervise the Black Berets. Do you measure this protest as something new, or is this more of the same disorder we've seen in Cuba for decades? Because of the internet and the iPhone, we were able to view it in real time. Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening, John. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on the program. Thank you for the invitation. And you raised some very important points. I think the first one is that often in the U.S., we are so fixated on our own internal political debates about the embargo and the role of the embargo and how that relates to the Europeans that we lose sight of how this looks from a Cuban perspective. And my understanding is that while, you know, certainly the repression of the regime and their management and mismanagement play important roles, really for the people in the streets, it was a combination of things. Number one is, yes, the persistence of shortages of food, of medicine, very harsh conditions. People were getting just sick of things. What really pushed things over the top, however, also was the explosion of the coronavirus. If you look from about June to presently, the number of cases there in Cuba went from about 100,000, which is relatively low, to over 400,000 today. Again, the Cubans have long prided themselves on their medical abilities and the export of their doctors and the production of their two indigenous vaccines. And the bottom line is that things just weren't out of control. And people were sick of the shortages. And compounding that was the fact that in about the past 3 years, thanks largely to the Chinese, there was new capability to communicate via the internet and communicate by cell phones. And when the protests took off, they really didn't take off among the same old groups that Cuban intelligence has long been looking at, the Mothers in White and groups like that. They really were very spontaneous at first. And so they really took the country many ways by surprise. Now, once they got over that mistake, they clamped down and repressed. And one of the key aspects of that is that once they realized the role of communication, both internally and to the outside world, they were able to turn to the Chinese who had architected those telephone systems and that internet and very quickly shut it down through the through the Cuban telecommunications firm. And so I think the Cubans now are in the mode of not allowing that mistake, which took them by surprise, to be repeated. But the sense of why Cubans are doing this, it's just, it's a frustration with a vast number of things. We in the U.S. like to see it as being about us and about our agenda. And it certainly is to some part the explanation of why things are that bad. And it's only partially to do with the embargo and partially to do with just the gross mismanagement of the Cuban government, of its people through communist government. But we fall into the trap oftentimes of trying to make this a debate all about us, when it's really about the frustrations of the Cuban people with a lot of different things all at once.
Striking to me, Professor, in the reporting was that these were young people in the streets who not only were not alive in the revolution, their parents weren't alive, maybe their grandparents weren't alive. We're talking about people who have learned of the world through the iPhone, the magic of the iPhone. They can see on TikTok what they don't have. Now, that's a powerful driver if you're 18 years old and facing another year without a PlayStation. I understand that sounds trite, but does that make sense to you, Professor?
Absolutely. The people who protest were reflecting the frustration with the situation. First of all, the last serious repression of protests was back in 1994, when things got really bad in Cuba after the withdrawal of aid from the former Soviet Union. And so the current generation, to some degree, has not been exposed to the level of actual repression and actual consequences when they doing what seems, you know, the Cuban government tells them that there's democracy in their country. But this is a discovery that is new for this generation, trying to actually act on that democracy and discovering the degree to which the democracy is really a lie of that regime.
The Cuban people right now are the question mark to the policymakers in Washington and in Europe as well. These new sanctions, are they likely to change the story? Or are these virtue signaling by Brussels and Washington?
Unfortunately, it's largely symbolic. The level of dependency of Cuban leaders Cuban bureaucrats on the United States is minimal. The sanctions really express our displeasure, but again, going back to the Cuban Revolution, a broad range of very harsh, U.S. economic and other actions have not yet changed the regime. Cuban intelligence and the Cuban military continues to stay fast by the revolution, and so I see no signs that a few sanctions will bring down Cuba, when an array of sanctions over the past years have not brought down the illegal Maduro regime, for example, in Venezuela, which is a much easier target.
The first secretary, also president, Miguel Diaz, Diaz Canel, is he a significant factor here? I've got the sense that he's almost faceless to the Cuban people. He certainly doesn't have the rhetorical skills of Fidel Castro. That would be too high a bar for any leader of a dictatorship. But in any event, is he a factor, or does he represent a regime that is faceless?
Canel is arguably a minor factor. You're just completing a transition that began in 2018 with a handover by, Raul Castro, the brother of Fidel, of the control of the presidency. And then, of course, just about 2 months ago, handing over the role of the party. It's been said multiple times in Cuba, effectively, that Miguel Díaz-Canel is no Fidel Castro, as you yourself point out. And there may be a certain degree of a willingness to test that leadership through these protests. And certainly his response was less than inspiring. But there is a transition of leadership. Both the leadership of the Castros is passing from the scene, but also the Cuban people who remember that struggle and were socialized in it are passing from the scene. Having said that, however, I see no indication that either Díaz-Canel himself is willing to soften up. Indeed, in many ways, he's actually clamped down. Nor do I see any indication that either the military or the party leadership or Cuban intelligence is looking to turn on Díaz-Canel. So I don't see any prospect for change. But certainly he is a minor factor.
Final detail about Cuba, because there's trouble elsewhere in the hemisphere. Cuba is said to staff critical positions in Caracas, perhaps other capitals, as enforcers. Is that still in place, or has there been any diminution of that because of the virus or because of the lack of hard currency? Because they do this for hire. They don't do this for free.
No, absolutely. As you alluded to, there are many different ways that Cuba exports control and exports the revolution that have continued and in some ways have actually worsened during COVID. Obviously, one of them is directly through Cuban intelligence. Number through is through the export of doctors and sports trainers and others who oftentimes also are playing an intelligence role. What we actually saw is that Cuba actually magnified the export of its doctors during the COVID-19 crisis. And so in some ways, those increased. And certainly the penetration of Cuban intelligence and others, Cuban security forces, in Caracas to help de facto Maduro regime stay in power. That is strengthened, if nothing else. And beyond that, frankly, one of the dark sides we've seen in recent years of this Cuban role in exporting authoritarianism is that going back to October 2019 in the difficulties in Ecuador and the difficulties in Chile and some of the things that we're seeing now in places like Colombia, there definitely appears to be the hand of a combination of Cuban and Venezuelan forces who are essentially weaponizing otherwise legitimate protests and frustrations to try to destabilize the situation and take things in the direction of a communist state. And you see that also in places like Cuba with people like Vladimir Cerón, the man behind the throne with the election of the new leader in Peru, Pedro Castillo. But I suspect we'll talk about that soon.
We will soon. Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American professor of research professor of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, looking at the trouble in this hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere. When we come back, we're going to Managua, Nicaragua. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.